believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Morning, everybody, and welcome to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. I'm your host, weekdays at 9 o'clock Central AM. All right, a little bit of housekeeping to go through. If you don't have a local affiliate to pick us up, or if you want to talk about Republic Broadcasting and get others in your circle of influence who don't necessarily have an affiliate near them, you can always go to republicbroadcasting.org. Look at the shows that are available, and you can also stream live. As well, if you'd like to spread the word about Republic Broadcasting, you can order 100 generic Republic Broadcasting business cards. They're $8. It includes shipping, and you get a bumper sticker with it. And in order to get that, you just call 800-724-2719 weekdays from 9 to 6 Central Time. You can also send to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664 for the same deal. Now, good buddy of mine by the name of Dave Champion, he has his own show weekdays at 3 o'clock Central right here on the Republic Broadcast Network, the Dave Champion Show. Now, Dave Champion is sponsoring the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, this year, 2009, out at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute, just outside of Las Vegas. Actually, not too far from our broadcasting studio here in Pahrump, Nevada. Now, there are many different options for this, but the thing is this. If you own a gun, you own ammo and whatnot, you can sign up for this course. It's $400 to attend, and that goes to the Dave Champion Legal Defense Fund. Now, those of you who listen to Dave know what that's about. If not, in short, Dave Champion is the tip of the spear in the tax honesty movement, and he's in the process of taking a one-man against a huge entity fight to the IRS in court. So that goes to the Legal Defense Fund. There are other options when it comes to some memberships out at Front Sight, a gun and gear package at Front Sight and whatnot. You can go online and check that out. You can also call Dave's office and speak to his assistant, Margo. Now, Margo can be reached at Dave's office at 775-751-0811. Let me spit that out to you again. Area code 775-751-0811. You can call Margo to sign up or get some additional information on the course. Now, I left Front Sight in October of 2008. When I left, I was the lead range master and lead instructor trainer. So I was the only guy on staff at that time who was qualified to range master every firearms course on the schedule, from beginning to advanced, handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, M16, precision rifle, all the advanced stuff. And I wrote virtually every curriculum on the schedule. So I have agreed to go with Dave and be there at this class. So you can meet not just one, but two RBN hosts at the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, 2009. Sign up, call Margo, 775-751-0811. We'll be back after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam's out
in the shoot, maybe a little too well. Finger on the trigger. Okay, welcome back from the break. Now, this show focuses a lot on the rights to keep and bear arms. Your right, my right, everyone's right. Now, whether they exercise that right or not is completely up to them, much like the First Amendment right to free speech. Some people exercise that all the time. I'm exercising it right now. You're exercising my right by listening. Okay, well, we have rights to keep and bear arms as well. Guaranteed the Second Amendment of the Constitution, hence the name 2A for Second Amendment Radio. And again, you can reach me, Bill, at 2aradio.com. Now, let's talk about not just rights, but responsibilities of being a gun owner. Now, I try to relate as many gun-related facets to vehicles as I can so that everyone understands them. Now, I can sit here and talk gun lingo and guns and gear and technique and all that stuff, and that'll even get past a lot of people who are, you know, just kind of interested enthusiasts, not really deep into it enthusiasts, as most people who own guns are. They have an interest, you know, but they don't necessarily do that much with it. Now, buying a gun and not learning how to use it really is like buying a vehicle and not having learned how to drive. Now, all types of guns out there that are for different purposes. So, same as vehicles, all types of vehicles for different purposes. If you want to go off camping out in the wilderness in the rough country, you don't buy a Corvette. You'd buy something like a four-wheel drive, maybe a Jeep, or maybe go all out and get a Hummer. But the thing is vehicles have different purposes, as do guns. Now, it's very common for me to have friends and students of mine come and tell me that they hear from their other half, well, you already own a handgun. Why do you need another one? Well, it depends on what kind of handgun you have and what the use is. Well, or you already own two rifles. Why do you need a third one? Well, it depends on what the purpose is. They're built for specific purposes. For instance, I own one revolver. That's it. I own a lot of semi-automatic handguns, Glocks and 1911s are pretty much what's in my collection because they're good defensive guns. I own one revolver. And one revolver only. It happens to be a 10-millimeter revolver, Smith & Wesson, Model 610, that you shoot. You have these full moon clips that actually drop the rounds into the chamber. Because of being a rimless cartridge, otherwise they'll fall through the entire chamber. Now, the reason I keep this is 10-millimeter fits perfectly between the power of a 357 and a 44 Magnum. More powerful than a 357, not as powerful as a 44. It's just under a 4-inch barrel, and it's a great gun to have as a backup for hunting. You go out and you hunt. Maybe you don't get the best shot. That's a good backup gun to finish off if you're not willing to go, use a knife blade, whatever other techniques are out there. So with that being said, that's what that gun, it has a purpose. I'm not going to take a semi-auto out to do that. I'm going to take that revolver. That's just my thing. So you have a right to own a gun. You have a responsibility. What is your purpose for the gun? Is it specifically for hunting? Well, if it is specifically for hunting, maybe you go out and get yourself a nice gun. Maybe you get yourself a Remington or a Winchester or something, maybe a .308 or a .30-06 to go out hunting deer and elk, which is wonderful. You know, first of all, you have to pick the appropriate caliber, one. You have to pick an appropriate action that you like to run, two. Reliability, you have to find the right ammo, and you have to go out and practice with it. And I tell you something that just absolutely baffles me, and it used to baffle me until I really realized that a lot of people just simply don't know what it is that they're doing because there's not a lot of good information out there. A lot of the information that you'll read in some of the gun rags is authors going into doing things, different stories and pieces based on what a manufacturer wants to get out in a magazine. So they might be doing a piece on a particular gun or particular ammunition, but they're not giving you the entire overview on the entire deal. So let's go through a couple of things. First of all, let's say that you're going to go hunting deer. You're going to take a .308 caliber bolt-action rifle, and you want to go with a 180-grain Winchester core-locked soft point ammo. All right, and we're just throwing all this stuff out there. I may have lost some of you. We're just saying, for instance, particular gun with a particular action with a particular ammo. Now, what you want to do is you want to go out and you want to get this gun sighted in. So where do we sight in a rifle? Almost all rifles should be with a rough sight in at 50 yards. Once you've got a pretty good sight, basically you should be about dead on at 50 yards. Then increase the distance to 200. The reason is the trajectory of the bullet versus the line of sight. If you sight in at 50, and it's easier to see the bullet impacts, easier to make the adjustments, when you get to 200, you just need to make the final adjustments. You go through far less ammunition and far less pain and torture and headache. Sight in your hunting rifles at 50, confirm at 200. This will give you a point of aim, point of impact within about a 6 to 8 inch area, out to about 270 yards, okay? So hold where you want the bullet to go, and within 4 inches high or 4 inches low, you will end up hitting right there. And on any large game, that 6 to 8 inch plate, that area, if you're holding in the center of the available area, maybe it'd be the heart, lungs, wherever you're aiming, it's going to hit. That's why you sight in there. Now, it's your responsibility to learn how to run the gun and run it safely. Now, keep in mind the universal rules of firearm safety. One, treat every gun as if it's loaded. Two, don't point the gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. Three, keep your finger off the trigger and outside of the trigger guard until you're ready to shoot. And four, be aware of your target and what's in line with your target. Now, that means not just your target and what's beyond it, but the foreground as well. You don't want to be shooting at something and someone or something gets between the muzzle and your target. Okay? That's a bad deal. And if your rounds would over-penetrate and continue downrange, or even worse, if you miss and they continue downrange, you don't want them to impact someone or something that it shouldn't. So have a safe downrange and have it safe between the muzzle and your target as well. Now, I'd like to add in a fifth rule, and that is keep your guns inaccessible to untrained or incompetent people, okay, or rather irresponsible people. So keep your guns inaccessible to untrained or irresponsible people, all right? That's going to solve a lot of problems. Okay, so now we've sighted in the rifle at 50 and 200. Everything's looking good. Now what? We go out and we hunt, right? Well, you got to make sure you have the right gear. You also should have a good idea on approaching and stalking the animal before you shoot. And you should also know what to do afterwards. It's not just about buying a gun and shooting. Here's another little tidbit, folks. When you sight in, use the exact same ammo you're going to use when you hunt. How about that? I actually have a good friend of mine who has worked a gun counter before, and a police officer came in there and said he was going to buy some ammo so he could sight in his deer rifle before deer season just this last fall. And the officer bought 180 grain, this guy, he bought 180 grain 308 bullet for hunting. He bought himself 150 grain bullet just so he could sight the gun in. Now, for those of you who know much about it, grains weights, basically it's 7,000 grains per pound. So the more grains, the heavier it is. 180 grain bullet for deer hunting is pretty darn good. But then to shoot a completely different ammo, possibly different brand, different primer, different powder, definitely different bullet, and sight in with that, and then use something else to hunt, you're not going to have the same point of impact. Your sight in is going to be a total waste of time. So spend the extra money, get the right stuff. Get the right ammunition that you're going to hunt with. Buy an extra box for sighting in. Start at 50, go back to 200 to confirm, and get it point of aim, point of impact. Right? That's what you need to do. Other responsibilities. Let's talk about if you own a handgun. Why do you own the handgun? Is it for self-defense? Okay. Is it for self-defense in public, in the car, in the home? What's it for? If you buy a handgun for self-defense, folks, you better learn how to use it in a defensive manner. You need to learn how to use it in a defensive manner. All right. Now, that being said, where do you acquire this training? There's training all over the country. There's probably something rather close to you. There are organizations that are set up that have training facilities that you can travel to. There's Gunsight in Arizona. There's Thunder Ranch in Oregon. There's Front Sight just outside of Las Vegas. There is a place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's a place in Colorado. There's a couple places in Texas. There's places all over the country where you can learn to use a handgun, rifle, or shotgun defensively. It's incumbent upon you to do that because a lot of people have the idea in their mind, if trouble finds me, I will rise to the occasion and be able to shoot and protect myself. The fact of the matter is, folks, it's not going to happen that way. You're going to be so surprised. About the moment that you need to grab that gun and use it, it's going to click into your head. My God, I have no idea how to use this. And only good fortune or bad fortune will get you through this. Good fortune will get you through. Bad fortune, the bad guy was tuned up more than you were. Now, keep in mind, bad guys do this sort of thing for a living. It is their job to go out and wreak havoc. If they carry a gun, they hang on to the thing. They use it. They know how to use it. They know how to create terror. They know how to come across and just overpower you. If you're not prepared for that, if you haven't trained for that, there's no way you're going to rise to that occasion. All right? More on the responsibilities of being a gun owner, responsibilities of training, when we return from the break.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so you've decided that you want to buy a gun to protect yourself. Now, why? Well, there's something referred to as the myth of police protection. In 1981, Supreme Court ruled that police are under no obligation to provide any individual police protection. So that means that protection of yourself and your family is entirely up to you, legally speaking. You can't sue the police if they don't come to try and save the day. So here's the idea. You're at home. You're in bed. Crash, boom, bang. You wonder, my God, what was that? It sounded like the back window breaking out. You're groggy, you're surprised, you're scared, you hear noises. All of a sudden, the door to your bedroom gets thrown open or worse, kicked in. And in arm's reach is a gun and a telephone. You have a choice to make. Are you going to pick up the gun as the armed intruder breaks into your bedroom? Or are you going to grab the phone to dial 911? Well, I think the answer is rather universal unless you are an extreme pacifist and enjoy being a victim. I think they call that a masochist. With that being said, once you have the gun in hand, do you know what to do? Do you know where to shoot? Do you know how to hold the thing? Do you know how to operate the thing? Do you know the condition that it's in? Do you know where to shoot? Do you know how to search around for the bad guys, how to handle this guy, how to handle the 911 call, which you will be making? Do you understand how to do all this? If the answer to even one of these is no, it is incumbent upon you to seek out the proper training to do this at a local gun range with a qualified instructor. Now, that doesn't mean somebody that says, okay, hold the gun in your hand, point in there, and start shooting the bullseye out of this target. We don't shoot at bullseyes for defensive shooting. We shoot at bullseyes for target shooting and for sporting reasons. We shoot at humanoid silhouettes and photographic targets of bad guys for defensive training. Now, some people think, oh, that's kind of sick. Well, what it is, it's the unfortunate reality. Society, guys, you don't have to live in a bad neighborhood because guess what? Bad neighborhoods are mobile, and the people from them will find you in your home, in your office, when you're out and about doing your daily chore. You could be miles and miles and miles away from what you would deem a bad neighborhood in your city or town, but someone from that part of town who intends to do you harm can be on your front doorstep, can be in your office, can be at the same shopping center that you are. And the question is, are you prepared? Now, that doesn't mean, are you paranoid? No, it means, are you prepared? Let's say that you've gone through this training and now you know what to do. How do you keep up with the training? Well, a lot of folks think they need to go to the range and shoot 100 rounds, 50 rounds, 200 rounds, whatever, of ammunition every week. That is simply not so. There is a term I want you to get familiar with. It's called dry practice. That's where you would use your gun in an unloaded configuration to hone and perfect the skills of shooting. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be for defensive nature. It could be for anything. There's a fellow by the name of Lanny Basham. Many of you recognize that name. Lanny Basham, Olympic champion, world champion. He was in the Army, signed to the shooting team at Fort Benning. He has a school in Texas where he trains Olympic and world-class shooters. And he uses a very positive power of thought. He has a book and an audiobook to complement it called With Winning in Mind. And that helps people get into the mental aspect of winning. Now, I remember a story in Lanny's book where he wasn't able to shoot but once or twice in a two-year period. All he was able to do was dry practice in his barracks, in his home. And he dry practiced for the majority of those 2 years. Only a couple of times was able to drive many hours to get to a range where he could shoot at the distance he needed to with his gun. And the next competition he went to, he won because the dry practice was good. Now, there are rules to dry practice, all right? Some of the rules are as follows. You make sure the gun's unloaded, and you take all the ammunition, and you put it two rooms away. No ammunition on you, and a belt carrier, and a pouch or a pocket anywhere in the room or even in the next room. Get rid of it. Put up a temporary target. Don't use a permanent feature of your home. Grab a target, stick it up on a wall or something that is specifically, you want to have an outside safe area or something that will trap a bullet if you do have a negligent discharge. Now, it's not an accident if one goes bang. It's negligence on your part. We don't want to have that. So preferably, let's say you have a big brick wall that goes out back. Well, that's going to be your safe dry practice area. It's not going to be the TV. It's not going to be a picture, nothing like that. And you will practice the techniques that you learned. Now, also keep in mind, let others in the house know it's dry practice time. Leave me alone. Turn off the phone. Don't answer it. And if you get any interruptions, what you're going to want to do is start at the top of your checklist again. Make sure the gun's unloaded. No ammunition anywhere around. Get everybody else out of the way. Let them know that you're practicing. Eliminate the distractions. And then put up your temporary target. When you're done, you want to tell yourself, okay, I am done with my practice session. Say it out loud. Then take that target down that you put up for practice and put it away. That will mentally take you out of that practice session, so now you can go about your day. More about training and how to train and what to train when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
So I had my insurance agent on the phone one time just after the Hurricane Katrina episode. And episode is in, you know, get out of town, and then there's a bunch of looting, and somebody decides, you know, let's take all the guns from the residents. We're not going to provide them protection. And we're going to take guns away from them. Now, thank God there's been federal laws passed. You can't violate their rights to do that. And there's also been state laws passed across the country to mimic that. So we should never see that again. Let's hope. Now, with that being said, I had my insurance agent on the line, and she tells me she's married, got a couple of kids, and she tells me that she knows what I do for a living. She knows that I'm a trainer. And she says, you know, my husband has said that he wanted to get a gun, and I was always against it. And the reason she was against it, she never had any knowledge of guns, never been around them, never used one, never even held one. So all she knew was the outside influence. And, all the influences you ever hear about guns are always negative. There's never anything positive in the media about them because that doesn't sell. What sells is guns are bad. When there is a gun story, guns are bad. And guns kill people, not other people. It's like if this pen in my hand right here, if that pen misspells a word, it's an evil pen. I should destroy it so it will never misspell another word again. Same thing with a gun. A gun in the hands of somebody, that gun should be destroyed because, you know, that gun is evil. No, the person that used that gun is evil. Okay, again, so I started going through this process with my insurance agent, as I do with everybody who brings up this sort of thing with me, and that is this. Okay, now she tells me that now because of the Katrina coverage, now she's thinking, well, maybe we should have a gun. So I asked her, what kind of gun do you think you should have? She goes, well, I'm thinking we should have a handgun. Okay, well, now my retort to that is, all right, you have a handgun. What's your purpose of the gun? Is it going to be self-defense? Are you going to carry it around? Are you going to get a consumment holster or a specialized purse, maybe from like Coronado Leather or Galco, something like that, with a specific spot to have the gun in it? Are you going to keep it in the car? What? Oh, no, just for home defense. Okay, well, here's the deal. Handguns are not a primary tool for self-defense unless you're out of the home as a general idea. Now, that's certainly my general idea. Now, I shoot handguns more than anything else. The reason is that when I'm out of the house, a handgun is what I'm going to have. The reason is that handguns, we don't carry them because they're powerful. We carry them because they're portable and concealable and not too heavy or cumbersome. You can carry handguns of various sizes based on your body size, weather conditions. I mean, if you're 150 pounds, you're in Las Vegas, and it's 115 degrees in August, you're probably not going to be carrying an N-frame Smith. You know, you're not going to be carrying a huge gun. You're probably going to be carrying a smaller gun. Now, same 150-pound person in Seattle in January, when it's the highs are in the 40s, you might be carrying a bigger gun. Now, of course, a bigger gun's more powerful, carries more ammunition. That's what you want. But it's not your primary thing to carry a handgun in the home. Now, I've heard some people say, I keep a handgun near the bed just so I can use it to fight my way to my long gun, to my rifle or shotgun. I hear this rhetoric spewed throughout this industry, the old, oh, the handgun's only good to fight your way to your long gun. Okay. Right. That is a statement out of pure, ballsy ignorance of someone who's never actually been in a gunfight. It sounds great. It's like, well, you know, bad guy comes in, I give him two to the chest and one to the head. Well, I challenge all but the very best of defensive shooters to do just that. You've got to practice, practice, practice. And it's not just any practice. It's perfect practice. And then you have to introduce a little bit of your own stress in this practice in order to be able to do such a feat. It's not easy. And anybody who starts to mouth that thing off, generally, you know, people who know don't say. People who say don't know. So anybody who's going to come up and say, oh, your handgun's just good for fighting your way to your long gun, it's just spewing old school BS rhetoric. To think that a gunfight's going to last more than 3 to 5 seconds is, you know, pretty off the wall. Most gunfights, for the most part, are during or directly after physical contact in the home or out in public because you get attacked. And there might be a knife, a gun in the bad guy's hand, whatever it is. You pull yours out to defend yourself or your family, and that's the way it goes. Anything beyond 5 to 7 yards is actually a rarity. However, it does happen, and it will happen in the home. That's where the further distance gunfights generally happen in someone's home. Now, when do people break into homes? It's usually not during the middle of the day. It's oftentimes at night. Most oftentimes at night when people are getting ready for bed or already in bed because Much like cockroaches, bad guys come out when the sun goes down. Now, this coming from a guy, I was a police officer in Las Vegas in the mid-90s. I worked two of the three or four highest crime areas, sectors, in the Las Vegas Valley during swing shift from 3 in the afternoon till 1 in the morning, 4 days a week. That was the majority of my time on the job. So, trust me, bad guys come out when the sun goes down, and they go to bed after the sun starts coming up or is already there. So, if they're going to come busting into your house, a handgun's a little more tricky to operate because you can only have two hands on it. With a long gun, you can have two hands on it, plus you can pocket the thing properly into your shoulder and get a cheek weld. That's where your cheek rests across the back of the buttstock so you can get on your sights. Now, what type of long gun is best for home defense? Well, that's a little bit longer discussion. Handgun, shotgun, submachine gun, if you can get that in your state and your town. You know, the long guns are varied. So when I was talking to my insurance agent, she said it's a handgun for home protection. And, you know, that, quite honest, she was very honest. She said, you know, they'd be happy to learn how to use them, but they're probably not going to go hog wild with the training. And my impression when I was done speaking with her is they might do a little dry practice here and there, and then it'll probably fall off when the passion of the Hurricane Katrina thing subsided, which is just, it's kind of an American sort of thing to do, is our memories are not very long. They're about as long as the tip on a ballpoint pen when it comes to things. I remember after 9/11 on 9/11/2002, a lot of people had already started to forget about it. Certainly by 9/11/2003, 2 years later, the American flags weren't on the cars anymore. The bumper stickers were gone. So I would imagine just from the conversation that there wasn't going to be a lot of practice involved. My recommendation was a shotgun. Now, a lot of things going on in New Orleans where people were literally standing guard right inside their house or on their front porch for bad guys. Now, you're sitting there, you got a handgun. That's not quite as an intimidation factor. You got a shotgun. I got to tell you, folks, you ever look down the barrel of a 12-gauge shotgun? That's an intimidating sight. You hear the action run on it, be it a semi-auto or a pump action, and you hear that action run, that's an audible clue. Very few percentage of people are going to carry on with any dastardly deeds when they're faced with a shotgun. Those who are, a shotgun is a good friend to have in a fight because one blast of double-odd buck is going to put somebody down as long as it hits the intended area and barring any body armor, which most bad guys, you're not going to find that happening when they're busting into your house in the middle of the night. So decide on what kind of gun you're going to use. Go get the training, and then you need to practice. Now, if it's, let's say it's going to be a handgun because you want to be able to take it out on the street or in the house. You might carry it when you're going shopping or whatnot, maybe even in the office if your company allows that. So what you need to do is figure out how you're going to carry it. Once you decide how to carry it, you need to practice with it like that. Now, if you're going to carry it in the car in a specific spot, you've got to figure out how to be able to practice with that without scaring the hell out of your family and neighbors. If you're going to just keep it near your bedside, you're going to have to figure out a way how to practice with it in the condition in which you sleep. Wake up, whether you're in your skivvies, whether you're just, you know, buck naked, whatever it is, however you're sleeping, wherever that gun is, you're going to have to practice with getting it. Now, of course, we're going to do all this practice completely unloaded, completely dry. We never, ever practice with a loaded gun. All right? Now, this is coming from a guy who started this whole training thing. I've had guns for over 20 years, 21 years, I think, is how long I've had them. And I have never had a negligent discharge in 21 years. And I made my living for the majority of the past decade as a professional firearms trainer. I've actually been an NRA certified trainer since the mid-90s. So in all that time, I've never had a negligent discharge. The reason is I follow the rules. A lot of people say if you're in this game long enough, you're going to have a negligent discharge. Well, that's a bunch of garbage. Because if you start thinking that you're better than the rules, that's when you'll have a negligent discharge. All right? There's big namesake people that have had negligent discharges in this industry, trainers, because they thought they were better than the rules. Now, they say, look, these rules are unbendable, but yet they bend them for themselves and sure enough have a negligent discharge. I don't bend them. You shouldn't bend them either. Don't do it. So if you're going to use a handgun for home protection, you got to figure out where it is, where you sleep in bed, the condition you're in. If you hear screaming coming from your kid's room, what are you going to do? Well, you're probably going to dial 911, and you may very well go in there. If you decide you're going to go in there, you're going to figure out how to do it. Now, a good friend of mine and a fellow trainer, as a matter of fact, he's over contracting in Iraq as a security guy right now, doing high-end security, former military, former SWAT. And he had a pretty good idea. He had a very good idea. And what he did was he had a Glock, a Model 23. That's a mid-size 40 caliber. Provided you don't have any legal restrictions, you can have a magazine which holds 13 rounds, otherwise 10 rounds for wherever you're living. And he had that gun with a flashlight and a pair of handcuffs in a one of those fanny packs that straps around your back and clips on. So he had the gun in one spot, and he had the handcuffs and the light in another spot because you don't want them rolling around together. And that was a dedicated gun for the house. If he heard noise bump in the night in another room, he could strap that thing on, grab the gun, grab the light. Now, he also charged his cell phone at night and kept the cell phone clipped onto that bag. So if at night he needed to get that bag on, he could just unplug the charger and he'd have a cell phone, a light, handcuffs, and a gun right there ready to go, and hung that right over the back post of his bed. Now, that's a great way to go. And trust me, this guy practiced that way. He would literally practice. So much so, go so far as to set his alarm in the middle of the night and sometimes close his eyes, just punch some buttons so he didn't know what time was going to go off. And when it went off, that was his clue that to practice that there was a burglar in the house. So get up, strap his stuff on, and go through and clear the house. Of course, he's doing this with an unloaded gun. Now, with all that being said, you may want to go that far, you may not. You have to go through all your safety precautions. It is incumbent upon you to find out what all of these dry practice procedures are. One organization that does a wonderful job in that is Front Sight. They have wonderful dry practice procedures. Go on their site, frontsight.com, see if you can find them. If not, contact them, see if they can get you a copy of that and follow those dry practice procedures. Once you've decided where this gun is going to go, it's going to go, okay, I'm going to use one gun fits all. It's going to go in the car. I'll carry it concealed under a jacket on my firing side and in inside the waistband holster, and I'm going to have it as a house gun as well. Okay, so those are three different ways. How are you going to carry it in the car? How are you going to keep it in the house? How are you going to carry it when you're out? Those are the three different ways you need to practice. Now, keep in mind, folks, if you decide to put it into, say, a muzzle-down shoulder holster, those are generally rather uncomfortable. You're going to have to practice from that. And keep in mind also, if someone comes right on you and they're in front of on your chest and it becomes a physical confrontation, to reach across your chest, grab that muzzle-down gun out of a shoulder holster and bring it out and engage a bad guy who might already be stabbing you, well, you're probably already going to be done. If you keep it in a small of the back holster, one that goes in your belt and basically fits in the small of your back, those are great because it can conceal even a very large frame handgun on even an average or smaller sized person. However, if you end up on your back, you can probably pretty well guarantee you're going to have some pretty severe injuries. You might even break your back, break your spine. You might have some spinal cord injuries. And it's certainly very difficult to sit down unless you have, say, an office chair of some kind where the back is cut out so that that's not pressing into your spine. And you can't drive with one either. Plus, if you're sitting down or driving, you can't access it. Are you going to be sitting in a car all day? Do you drive all day long, maybe running some sort of security issue? Or are you just running deliveries or something and you're allowed to carry a gun? Maybe it's your own business, whatever. Well, oftentimes a cross-draw holster is the way to go if you're going to be sitting down. If you're confined to a wheelchair, a cross-draw holster is a great way to go, all right? And a lot of people are confined to wheelchairs. I have trained dozens of people who are confined to wheelchairs or scooters. And a scooter is a little easier to move around because there's just a small little back piece you can carry on your firing side hip. But if you're sitting down, cross-draw is a good way to go. Then you have off-the-body methods such as fanny packs, purses, those little day timers, briefcases, things like that. Just realize those things can come off. Wherever the gun is, you got to be able to practice with it from there. Here's the other thing. If it's an open deal, like, say, for ladies, a purse, for the guys, a briefcase or a day timer or a fanny pack, you've got to have one that has a special compartment easily accessible for the gun and the gun only. You don't want to have the gun rolling around with your keys. My sister has a coworker who was out on a walk with her husband and their dog. They were about six blocks from the house. He was carrying his legally possessed concealed gun. He was carrying it in a pocket with his keys. He went into his pocket to fumble around with the keys, and the gun went off. And it shot him in the thigh. So there they are, six blocks from the house with the dog. He's got a shot to the thigh where the femoral artery resides. Luckily, he didn't hit it. And now, what do we do? Well, get on the phone, call 911. His wife grabbed the dog and ran back to the house, six blocks. And by the time she got back, now, of course, none of the neighbors would come out. By the time she got back, and if I remember the story right, she was kind of frazzled, didn't think to grab the car, just she ran home. She's thinking about her husband. She ends up running back. So now she's got 12 blocks of running. And now the ambulance is there, police are there, and the neighbors have finally come out to, you know, see what the aid is going on. But that's just to keep in mind that you don't want to have anything rattling around with the gun if you carry it in something other than a holster, all right? We're going to carry on with the training on 2A Radio when we return from the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Why 1917? Did we choose that in the bumper? Well, because that was the year of the Russian Revolution when guns were taken from those folks. Okay, so we've decided we're going to take our own personal security for ourselves and our loved ones into our own hands. And we're going to learn how to run guns, how to not just shoot them, but how to keep them running. All right, just a little tidbit, even though this is a poor example of somebody using a gun. In 1997, the Bank of America heist in North Hollywood that lasted 44 minutes, one of the bad guys with his AK-47 got what's referred to as a Type 2 malfunction, that is a failure to eject where you have high brass. Some people call it a stovepipe malfunction. Didn't know how to clear it, dropped it, ended up grabbing a handgun, which is actually good for everybody else. But just it points out the fact that a very simple malfunction to clear, got to know how to do it. And we don't want you to be in those situations. So you got to learn how to keep the gun running and how to shoot. So it's gun handling, it's marksmanship, it's tactics. We'll talk about all of that in the program as we progress. So we're going to go get training. From there, we're going to decide what to carry. Then we're going to decide how to carry it. Then we're going to decide where we're carrying it. All right? So that's what we need to practice, from how we're going to carry it and where we're going to be when we're in that carrying configuration. That's what we need to practice. To do anything else is silly. A lot of people will do dry practice. Then when they go to the range, now keep in mind about 75-80% of your time with a gun should be dry and practicing. That's honest to God where you get better, because you don't end up with the flinch from recoil where the sights dip because you're anticipating recoil. That's a bad thing. So you can get rid of that with dry practice. If you're dry practicing, you're watching your front sight dip down and off to your support side, then that means that you're anticipating the shot and you're making the gun go off. Don't do that. Okay? We want to press smoothly on the trigger until we get a click in dry practice. It would be a bang when we shoot live at the range. So when we're out at the range, what do? Well, oftentimes people put up a bullseye target and they'll just bang, bang, and try to put all the bullets in the same hole. That's asinine. If you're going to practice defensive shooting, when you go to the range, what you should do is whatever your dry practice regimen is, you should do the exact same thing. But now you've got bullets in the gun and a target to shoot those bullets into. I relate it again to cars. Let's say that you are warming up for the Indy 500. You're going to drive an Indy car, and you're going to go around this 2.5-mile track in circles with four corners, right? So the way that you practice for the Indy 500 is you get into a stock car and you go race the Road Atlanta road course. Not going to do you much good for Indy. Now, it's driving a race car, but it's driving on a track, but it's not what you're tuning up for. So that's the way I associate this. If you practice one way at home, dry, and then you shoot live at a range using completely different format than what you practice. Practice at home should be done in a very structured setting. When you go to the range, should be the exact same structured setting, only live. That is the right way to practice. I hope you enjoyed today's show on training. I hope you got some things out of it. You can feel free to contact me, bill@2aradio.com. And we hope you're here to hear me for the next show. Thank you very much.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.